All right, can everybody hear me? Is this good? Not good? Yes? No?
No, it's on. I saw it. The light's on. I hear it.
Hello?
Yeah, that's...
All right, so that's good for everybody?
Keep the mic closed. Repeat any questions.
All right, I'll do that. So, so last month, you guys heard about ARM on FreeBSD, and so I'm going to talk about what I do. Like, it's the second half of this not i386 world talk we've been doing, myths on OpenBSD. And the way this is going to work is, if anybody have questions, just yell them at me. Just stop me and yell them, and I'll be happy to answer them. All right, so a few questions about MIPS to start. First of all, probably most importantly, is why should you care? After all, the vast majority of you guys probably don't own any MIPS hardware like I do. So it's not something that you deal with, so why should you care about it? If you do care about it, where can you get some? And then I just want to talk about the history of what we currently support, the state of how it is now, and then going into the future, what we have in store. And then just a little bit about me. George mentioned a little bit. I got my commit bit for OpenBSD about early January. I mostly do ports, which is what I got invited in to do. Just if you guys have read the NiceBug site, you'll know I'm not by trade a computer scientist or a tech person. In fact, outside of this, I'm kind of useless in the tech world. I don't follow the news. I don't know a whole lot about that kind of stuff.
Should we be saying boo?
If you want. I don't mind getting booed. I just bring that up just so you guys know where I stand, and just for the fact that, you know, you don't have to be a tech person to get involved in this kind of stuff.
So what is your background? Why did you get into BSD?
All right, so my background is I am by trade an anthropologist and a musician, and I got into OpenBSD because I thought it was interesting. And that's really the long and the short of it. It's something that I've always been interested in as an anthropologist. It has to do with issues of power. And we can talk about it at the bar because anthropology is something I definitely love to talk about, and that's how I got started, and this just worked out well for me. So like I said, I'm interested in doing MIPS support, and my wonderful start in getting involved in the OpenBSD project was I wanted to port some games over to OpenBSD, which is not probably the story everybody wants to hear, but it was really simple. About a year ago, somebody who probably hasn't posted an email since sent a little blaster saying, I have this neat little game that currently runs on Linux and Windows, and I'm wondering if anybody would want to try it on OpenBSD. So I said, might as well give it a shot. And I did, and eventually, after about a month of really kind of terrible work, I'll be the first to admit my first go at this was absolutely god-awful. And since I know this is being recorded, I'm going to apologize to Stuart for being so nice to me for the first round of this stuff, because it was really bad. So my current MIPS inventory that I have at home is I have an SGI-02 and then a bunch of these Limo long sun machines, which is predominantly what I'm going to talk about. I have two of the Elongs, which is the little netbooks, a Fulong, which is a mini server about the size of an external CD drive, and I also have a long sun 1B development board, which currently doesn't do anything. So, why MIPS? Especially for those of us who don't run MIPS. According to a 2011 article that was on the CEO of MIPS at the time, they claim that 500 million MIPS CPUs are shipped every single year. Now, the vast majority of these are in things like set-top boxes and other things that you probably can't or don't want to run, you know, non-specialized software on. But at least some of these end up in general purpose devices. And if they do, then we should support them, because we should try to expand as much as possible.
Do you know the history of MIPS? I don't know if you're old enough to know the history from 20 years ago. But MIPS was incredibly important years ago.
It was developed by a professor out in California.
All the SGIs from MIPS, so a lot of vendors. It was a key platform for Unix for many, many years. And then I thought it all disappeared. And to my great surprise, about a year or two ago, I realized that the embedded market is flooded with MIPS because it's an architecture like the early ARMs. People can just make the chips, give them the IP, the intellectual property for it.
Yeah.
So it was, and now I think it is again. Yeah. Because most people don't know.
MIPS is definitely having a mini renaissance of sorts. But thank you. Thank you for filling in my history.
Most of the junior programmers, NIPS.
Probably check out the Wikipedia page. Should be pretty good.
Yeah. So another reason for MIPS is, of course, the ever-famous phrase, shut up and hack, especially in this day and age where everybody seems to be involved in this semi-battle between ARM and x86. It's kind of nice for me to sit back and not have to worry about that. And as I was telling George earlier, I really don't know a whole lot about ARM stuff. And I listened to last month's audio, and that was way over my head. I couldn't tell you, you know, boards, anything. Just, it's all like this to me. But I can talk about MIPS all day. So it lets me just, you know, be quiet, do what I want to do. And I found my niche through this. Of course, other architectures always help us find bugs. You know, we should not live in an x86 world. And these other architectures help us to break free of that. And like we just found out, MIPS is not going away. You know, it's definitely having a renaissance. People who do follow the news, MIPS the company recently got sold. And there was concern that it would be sold to ARM or somebody else who would kind of quash the IP. That seems not to have happened. It seems that the IP will flourish and continue to be sold out to people who want to make these chips. And of course, it goes without saying, if you do MIPS work, you'll be the coolest person that you know. And just for my sake, it's just fun, and I enjoy doing it.
Miscellaneous point, the IBM Power chips that make all the IBM Linux servers, they also are very strong in the embedded market also. So MIPS, ARM, and Power are actually, I think, and Intel, of course, the four biggest that I know about. Maybe a fifth one out there. But there's a lot of automotive IBM issues. And so you never know where these things are going to
Right, yeah, these things pop up everywhere. And in more places than we even imagine. Like I said, you know, I opened up my cable box and sure enough, there's a MIPS chip in there. Now, I'm probably not going to open BSD on it because I like TV, but, you know, they're out there. So we support two main platforms. The first one is SGI, second one is Longsung. I'm just going to kind of briefly go over the history of SGI with OpenBSD. It starts in 2004, originally only targeting the O2s, and it kind of just sits that way for years and years and years and years and years until last year, and then all of a sudden, it was like a big upswing in SGI work, and now the vast majority of SGI machines work more or less out of the box on OpenBSD. But unfortunately, they're divided into families, and each family has its own kernel, and that's just because of design choices that SGI decided on when they built these boxes. So it's not like AMD 64, where no matter what computer you have, you get the AMD 64 kernel and you just go with it. You actually have to look up which family your computer belongs to and get the right kernel for it. And if you don't, then you'll find it immediately just won't work. And these are just some boxes. SGI, for some reason, like the colorful boxes. I kind of wish you could go back to that. The O2, what I have it on the left, and on the right is the fuel. So what works? Pretty much everything except for X, with one exception. The O2 and O2 pluses, X does work. But that's the only platform. However, you will get a glass console on everything except for one of the families. I forget which one. But one of them doesn't have a working frame buffer. Everything else, you can at least plug a monitor into it and be able to see what's going on. And this is probably an easy way if you want to get involved in MIPS work. This stuff is cheap. You can get it on eBay. And because of the class of these machines, oftentimes they have really interesting backstories to them. If people are interested in collecting computer hardware for their stories, I can tell you my O2, for those of you who were children in the 90s or have had children in the 90s, and to remember Nickelodeon cartoons like Rugrats and, you know, Hey Arnold, that kind of stuff, my O2 is actually part of the server farm that made all those cartoons. So all these machines have those kind of interesting stories. So even if you're just a collector, you know, these are definitely machines that you'd want to pick up anyway.
What's your host name on that one?
My host name on that one? It's Rico. It's currently in the box. It's in the closet because it's funny with me. I think it needs a new hard drive. Alright. So that's kind of the history of
proprietary the parts like the hard drive and the RAM. So it's not, right?
The hard drive and the RAM is not, to my knowledge. Everything else, you know, you have to kind of scour eBay until what you're looking for comes up.
I'm divorced, yeah.
Yeah. And even like things like the audio, they come on their own separate modules. Like anything that isn't just hard drive and RAM, you kind of have to scour for. All right, so the majority of what I want to talk about, which is what I spend most of my time on, is the Huangshan processors. These are more or less one of China's homegrown CPUs. It comes from the ICT branch of the Chinese Academy of Sciences. Unlike SGI, which is a big endian MIPS, this is a little endian MIPS. So unfortunately what that means for us is we have to do everything twice when we build, because obviously you can't swap endian. So it's kind of double the work if you're doing MIPS work. And the idea behind these, more or less according to the official Chinese government story, is that this and there's another MIPS chip called the Ingenic Xburst, and they developed some sort of Spark offshoot, and they're trying to get these so they can achieve their own technology independence and free themselves from Intel and other American companies. Will it happen? Who knows? But that's their line on this whole
kind of stuff. Is that a strategy for us to be free of Intel too? Or?
Sure. I mean, I'm getting there. Other than this laptop, I have no Intel machine. So the Huangshan comes in 3-4 families. The T one on the bottom we're not really going to worry about because I haven't actually seen any of these in existence. They're just kind of being talked about. So the one line is 32-bit processors. The two line is 64-bit, but not MIPS 64R2 processors. And Huangshan 3 is 64-bit, fully MIPS 64R2 processors. And the reason for that is because when Huangshan 2 family showed up, they didn't, at the time, yet have a license from MIPS to run MIPS. So they had to leave out 4 instructions that were patented by MIPS. So the early ones, I think the 2B and the 2C lack those 4 instructions, and then the E and the F have them. The one we're really focused on is the 2F, because that's the one that ends up in all the commercial products. And the other thing is, this chart, although you'll find it on Wikipedia if you go on it, is slightly misleading. The actual chart shows like this, with 2H and 2G in the Huangshan 3 category, which is utterly confusing. But the reason behind that is because all the 3A is 4 2Gs on one chip, and all the 3B is 4 2Hs on a chip. So go figure. So the 3 main computers that you can actually buy from them, there are 2F machines, like I said, the Fulong, the Linlong, and the Yilong. And if I totally butcher these pronunciations, stop me, because I have no idea. This is what they look like. The one on the left is the Linlong, the one on the bottom is the Yilong, which is what we're predominantly going to talk about, and the one on the right is the Fulong. So if people do know these computers, they know the Yilong, that's the famous free software laptop, the RMS laptop, whatever you want to call it. This is the one where from top to bottom, every little piece of software is free software. The BIOS is PMON, which is BSD license. You know, the OS it normally ships with is obviously some form of Linux, which has been freeified, I guess you can say. And even the graphics chip and the wireless don't require firmware. So everything from top to bottom can be run and does run on free software. So on OpenBSD, support for these machines come in around the 4.7 timeframe. That's the first release. That's when I got my first one because I saw that OpenBSD was supported and I thought, neat, I'll get one, I'll see what it's like. So what good is a computer unless you can actually use it? So I didn't bring my little laptop because I was afraid that, I was afraid it wouldn't play well with the projector because it only outputs in 1024x600 and I did not know if the projector would like that. So I'll show lots of pictures so you can at least see what's going on and what you can actually hope to achieve with these things. So just for proof, you know, this is in fact OpenBSD running on Huangshan. I'm just showing XFCE here just to show you how much you can actually hope to run on this. I personally don't use XFCE in general. I'm a Fluxbox guy. I use it on everything, even this laptop. Just force of habit.
Where did you get all the devices you're playing with? Various Stahlong?
I have purchased all these myself over the years.
From internet or they retail?
About
the embedded one, the Fulong, looks like it probably would be an embedded catalog.
Yeah, so the laptops, when I first got mine, there wasn't one American company selling them. They no longer sell them. I think he went out of business about, I want to say like a year and a half ago. The other one, the Fulong, I bought straight from the manufacturer. They have those nice little Chinese proxy bidding services, and they have a store on one of those, and you can just buy them and they'll ship it to you.
By the way, outside of these long systems that you're describing, the hardware, are there other MIPS, and excluding the SGI, are there other MIPS CPUs or MIPS systems that are supported? Or is this the entire
range? No, this is the entire range of what we currently support. Back about 11, 12 years ago, there was support for other MIPS systems, but support of that was dropped at least a decade ago. I actually went through CVS to actually see when the goodbye message was. I think it was like 11 years ago. So it's been a long time, and as a result of that, a lot of this work had to essentially, you know, start up again from scratch. Because even at the time that SGI came out, you know, came to be, they're still talking about probably 6-7 years before between their last being any official MIPS support and now. And the old MIPS support was actually 32-bit, and we're running 64-bit kernels and a 64-bit user land. So everything had to be essentially done from scratch.
But have you looked at the other BSDs and their MIPS support, like FreeBSD or NetBSD? Probably.
Yes, I'm going to talk about that later.
Okay, great.
But it's a good question. So things you can hope to do with these machines is, as you can see, you can get the internet. You know, this is, you know, Midori runs WebKit, so WebKit is good to go. You can view PDFs. And now that I look at that, I probably shouldn't have used that one. That was my reading for class on Monday. I don't condone the actual content, but you can expect to use PDFs if you want to write something, add your word works, you know, things that you would expect to see with your daily, you know, everyday laptop. And I do use this every day. I take this to the university with me. It's a lot lighter to carry around than this thing, as nice as this thing is.
It's kind of like being the kid with the dyed pink hair, right?
Exactly. It's like being the kid with the dyed pink hair. Unfortunately, I go to a very liberal university, so everybody's that kid with dyed pink hair. you can play audio with it, and yes, I actually use this console-based audio stuff even on my high-powered machines. I've never got into the big, ugly iTunes replacement things. I don't like them. I don't use them.
So which one are you using?
That's just MPlayer, but I use everything. CMuse, MP3 Blaster, MPG123, you name it, I have it installed somewhere. Social networking, for those of you who are on app.net, like I am, there's actually, believe it or not, a command line client for app.net and for Twitter. So you can do that stuff. You can view pictures. You know, like I said, everything that you can generally expect to do. Spreadsheets, and of course, games. Most games don't work as well as you expect them to, but there's a good number of them that you can actually play and are playable.
What do the MIPS ports look like versus the i386 ports?
We'll get into that.
Oh, right.
It's all in the plan. No, good question though.
Sorry.
It's okay. So where do you get one? Unfortunately, finding 2F machines is getting more and more difficult. As far as I can tell, the manufacturer Lemote has generally stopped building these machines for no other reason than the fact that they're starting to shift production to making 3A machines and up, so they don't really want to support the old hardware. But if you look hard enough, you know, this stuff does pop up every once in a while. But like I said, if you want to get started with MIPS, SGI is really the way to go, because that stuff is flooded in eBay. You can type in SGI and get, you know, and on a bad day, 300 hits. So, MIPS and ports. The goal is, of course, to provide as close to the number of packages on AMD 64 i386 as possible. Now, just a question. How many people here actually use OpenBSD, know our philosophy when it comes to doing ports and packages? Just show of hands so I know how much to explain. So, not that many. All right, so the way it works is, unlike from what I'm led to believe with FreeBSD, and anybody can correct me on this if I'm wrong, is we build packages to support each dot release, and we expect users to use the packages that we make. We spend a lot of time building these packages and testing these packages to make sure that they work. and we don't want people pulling down current porch trees and building them on the lease. If you do that and you complain, you'll be ignored. So that's just a general heads up. So if you want to use something and you're running a dot release, you know, any one of our releases, you look in the packages and don't really spend time with the ports unless there's something in there that you want to particularly build to your case, which shouldn't be too much. We use pretty same defaults as far as we can. So this is the packages coming out for our next release in May, 5.3. So I386 has the most with 7,670. Close behind by AMD64 with 7,632. PowerPC has got 7,215. Spark64 has 6,756. And then come the MIPS. MIPS64EL, the long sub machines, has 6,539. MIPS64SGI has 6,519. PA RISC has 6,401. Alpha has 6,151. And VAX, although this is not quite a fair comparison, has 2,081. And that's for a lot of different reasons why the VAX falls behind in that. But the important part is that MIPS isn't that far away from I386 and AMD64. At least it's nowhere near as far away as it was in the 4.7, 4.8 days. It's really done well to really catch up. And of course, work is always improving.
How many people? Is it only you doing intro?
There's a couple of us. It's not a ton. You know, it's all volunteers, of course. And you know, OpenBSD just simply doesn't have as many developers as FreeBSD does. And I think just looking through the documents of FreeBSD, I think they have something more like, what is it, a few hundred? Am I wrong? Close, a few hundred. You know, we don't have active, you know, anywhere close to that. So there's more than just me, but it's not like there's teams and teams of people who are particularly interested and actively working on this.
How about commercial support for this stuff? Is all the MIPS stuff, given the hardware scarcity, is it all volunteers? I mean,
as far as I
with no commercial incentive.
As far as I know, it is all my stuff. Anything I do is with no commercial incentive. I can't think offhand of anybody who gets donated specifically MIPS boxes, but I can check on that. But I don't think offhand. I don't actually know offhand, so I probably shouldn't say definitively one way or the other. So big ticket items that you can expect to find on MIPS. Well, GTK 2 and 3, which is big, because that generally means that anything that you write that requires one of those two, you should expect it to work. Python, and I remember the days when we did not have Python on MIPS, and that shut out, you know, thousands and thousands of packages. So getting Python was huge. WebKit, like I showed before, we have that with one small caveat. And that one small caveat is heavy JavaScript, like Gmail, tends to choke. And you tend to get nice little core dumps. So I would recommend that, for now at least, running the browser where you can turn off JavaScript support, unless you know that you're not going anywhere that uses heavy, heavy JavaScript. I live in a world where I don't even care about that stuff. If JavaScript doesn't work, not a big deal. I don't go to any fancy sites like that. Like I showed, MPlayer, other audio players, they all work. Like I said, I like the console ones, but most of the GUI ones work. A few of the really, really big ones don't, due to an odd dependency on PyGTK2, which currently doesn't work. It used to, now it doesn't. It'll work again in the near future, but for now you have to avoid those. AddyWord, other Office applications work. And all your window managers and desktop environments up to XFCE and complexity. Lots of GNOME stuff works, but you can't just expect to get everything of GNOME right away through packages. And that has to do with Atomic Ops. Some of the GNOME packages expect that. We don't currently have Atomic Ops on either MIPS platform. It's coming, it'll be there soon. And then that'll open up all of GNOME.
Atomic Ops in what context? Software, or are you talking about something at the chip level?
No, software. It's compiler support stuff. We just lack currently a modern compiler that does it.
Do you know offhand what was with Python? Because porting interpretive languages,
I don't remember offhand, but I know if you were to go to the port tree on CVS Web, part of Python's license requires you to list every change that you've made to it, and so it will be there. And I only know that because I actually fixed a Python bug the other day, and I had to actually go and type in what I did.
What about server apps?
Anything that's headless basically works. You shouldn't have any surprises there.
And if the C compilers work and you get the OS up with the system calls, it's just...
Okay, so Apache, Sendmail...
Yeah, that's all in base. Anything that's in base
works. Anything in base is fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything in base is fine. You should expect to run base on NIPS like you would run base anywhere else.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and that's just me personally. I actually run a Gopher server on my Foulon. Well, it's because I maintain one of the Gopher ports. That's why. So I figured if I maintain it, I might as well use it. And then that's the announcement about this talk on Gopher 2. I'm glad you all looked. So big ticket items that we don't have at the moment on this, Mozilla. The only exception to that is we have SpiderMonkey, and I have no idea why, but SpiderMonkey does in fact work. So if anybody out there wants to write a browser that uses WebKit for the HTML and SpiderMonkey for the JavaScript, you'll be my hero for at least like 6 months. So if anybody wants to do that, let me know. LibreOffice doesn't work. The smaller Office apps do. That actually will probably come sooner rather than later. Qt 4 does not work. It builds, and it takes 3 days to build because I've done it. But it doesn't actually work. So unfortunately, everything that relies on Qt 4, you miss out on. Qt 3 does work, though. So if you have, for some reason, apps that rely on older versions of Qt, then you'll be okay. Clang doesn't work yet, but mysteriously, LLVM tools do. So I'm not sure why Clang doesn't work. That's being actively more or less worked on. We don't yet have GCC higher than base, which is 4.2.1. So in retrospect, it's actually kind of nice how much we actually have because we miss out on these later compilers. It just shows you how strong of a system we have. And then the last thing is video support. This is not ports related. X is not accelerated on any MIPS platforms. So do not expect to watch videos more than a postage stamp. I thought about when I was making up this thing, finding a video that was small enough to actually play in full screen, or not full screen, play in full speed. And I found it. It was 320 by 240 at 23.9 frames per second. So we're really talking about postage stamp size. I'm not sure that currently supported MIPS platforms will ever get accelerated X, unfortunately, but future ones probably will. At least they have a better shot than what we currently have.
Do you have a consistent video card across these platforms? The embedded box you showed probably has a video.
Believe it or not, all of the MIPS boxes have different frame buffers.
Doesn't surprise me. Would any of them, since they're kind of PCs, are they PC compatible, such that standard VGA
so
might work with them?
Yeah, so they use parts that you would see in older laptops and older desktops. They are, to my knowledge, relatively off the shelf.
So
because I know what the laptop uses is a Silicon graphics. I think it's for 712, something like that. It has a specific driver for it in X. We don't use that driver because we don't have accelerated X.
The reason I'm asking is because the notebooks, for example, that if they can run Windows, I don't know if they do, but if they could, then theoretically standard 640 by 480 VGA should work.
Well, these don't run Windows, because these are MIPS. But to my knowledge, the video, all the other hardware except for the CPU, and I guess parts of the motherboard, are generally off-the-shelf parts. It uses standard RAM, any laptop DDR2 RAM you can find, any SATA hard drive you can find. So that kind of stuff is off-the-shelf. They just slap a different CPU in the middle. But it probably has more to do with the underlying software than it does with the hardware.
Well, they probably selected it for a reason to be incompatible or because they didn't want to deal with certain companies or something like that.
Unfortunately, I can't speak for them, but
most people try and go for the PC compatibility just so everything runs on
I wouldn't be surprised if you turn out to be correct about that. So, some common problems when it comes to dealing with MIPS ports. Again, we should not live in an x86 world. Unfortunately, most people who write software kind of assume that we do. So, audience participation time. Everybody here, if you write code, whether it's for fun, for work, whatever, raise your hand. All right. So, good number of people. So, everybody raise your hand again if you've ever thought to yourself, other than a fleeting moment, does the code I write actually work on MIPS?
It is SGI at some point.
Okay, at some point. Currently. Do you currently wonder about software supporting MIPS?
My stuff would tend to work on an SGI Unix, for example, or an SGI running something else.
I'm actually surprised you saw two people. I was thinking about nobody. Because when I generally ask this question, people just stare at me.
We have Python support, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
I was going to
say you have a POSIX like shell.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, shell scripts count.
Yeah, that's true. Shell scripts count. So, that's something I ran across once. By the way, if you try to type that in and run it on GCC, you get a hilariously unhelpful error message. It doesn't even attempt to give you an answer to that problem. Client actually will.
If you put parentheses, it might give you, it might work.
Right, but that's the actual line.
Yeah.
So obviously, in context, it's the else if that we wanted, not the if. But the point is, this was actually shipped software. This is actually the latest release of GNU-PG, this line was found in, which demonstrates to me that nobody actually took the time to either double check or even compile the stuff on those machines, because it would come up immediately, and they would know, and they wouldn't have shipped the code that way. Instead, it was us having to find out and fixing it for them, essentially.
The number one thing you can do to make software better is port it.
Yeah.
And if you port it to over 8 distinctly unique platforms, it's usually pretty damn good at that point.
Yes, and you'll also help me a lot. Because then I don't have to worry about fixing anything. So some other common problems that we have is, like I said, since people generally assume we live in the x86 world, they tend to just assume things about the machine you're building on that aren't necessarily true. And this actually came back to bit us when we were trying to figure out how to get SpiderMonkey to work. It assumed that every computer that would ever build it had access to their written assembler, which only works, I believe, on x86 and PowerPC, maybe ARM, but I could be mistaken, but definitely not MIPS. And so we had to actually go through the configure script and disable it. And once we did, it works just fine, because it actually has a C backend. It'll work anywhere. But the fact is that they didn't assume anything other than the standard x86 world, so they left it to other people to worry about it. And it should be the other way around. They should at least, be nice to us.
Or the assembly language has been in use for 10 or 15 years, and no one's touched the C part of it.
That could be true, too. That's starting to happen now with WebKit. The latest WebKit has done the same thing. They simply assume you have the ability to run their assembler programs, which, again, they don't even bother to include in MIPS. But same thing, once you tell it to use the C backend, it works just fine. So it's more like a pain for us to have to go back and reconfigure it than anything else. But it just shows the fact that, upstream, not often, but occasionally, doesn't actually pay attention to the MIPS world, and that's something that we should be working on, especially people like me who actually do this. We should be reminding them, hey, MIPS is out there, MIPS is not going away, MIPS is a thing, you should be supporting this, and you should make it just as easy to install on a MIPS box as you do on an x86 box or an ARM box. But unfortunately, sometimes the problem's on our side. Usually it's toolchain related. For those of you who don't know, OpenBSD is still on binutils 2.15, so it's old stuff. For MIPS, we still only have access to GCC 4.2.1. That is being changed hopefully very soon. The people who actually follow OpenBSD source commits, binutils 2.17 came out. It was put in a snapshot about, I want to say, 2 weeks ago. It was quickly pulled because there's lots of just problems that need to be cleaned up. Once 2.17 comes, we get GCC 4.6 and I believe 4.8 on MIPS. So once that happens, we will get a lot more ports going, because then anything that doesn't build on 4.2, we can just say, try it on 4.6, try it on 4.8. And a lot of the time that will actually fix the problem. I've actually installed 2.17 myself to get 4.6 just to play around with it, and a lot of those ports that generally are thorns in our sides get cleaned up nicely. So we get access to a lot more. Another problem that's on our side is our memory mapping. It currently only lets us use a 1 gigabyte window. So we get a lot of linker errors because it exhausts memory. That's something that's going to be worked on, hopefully, in the relative future. But that's something that is outside of my league. Like I said before, there's no accelerated X. So if you're looking for video, if you're looking for fast gaming, you're not going to find it here. And CPU speed. And that's really more for people like me than it is for people like you who are using, you know, just using the stuff. Because package edit takes, you know, all 2 seconds. As fast as it takes you to download, it's as fast as you get the packages. But for someone like me who has to work on this stuff, like I said before, Qt 4 literally takes 3 days to build. And when we were trying to figure out the last steps to actually get it to build, we didn't find the error until about a day and a half into the build. So at minimum, we're talking about 4.5 days just to get a working Qt 4, which is a lot of time. You know, you can build the same thing on an AMD 64 box in a matter of hours. So you have to be careful and really check and double check and triple check your work before building stuff.
At the risk of hitting a future slide again with this question, are there emulators where you can emulate the MIPS reasonably well on an i64-bit Intel or AMD box that's really laser fast?
Not really yet. The best though would be QEMU, but that currently doesn't have MIPS64 backend support. Apparently they claimed it used to at one point in time, but I've never found one that actually did.
Yeah, I thought there was one out there for a while.
There's a few other ones, but I've never gotten them.
There's some interesting emulators.
Yeah, that is really...
Bats and PDP, yeah. and ARM. And
yeah, that'll actually get touched, not on the slide, but something George was talking about before when he said about cross-compiling and virtual machines. It's generally considered a no-no in the OpenBSD world. Our philosophy is if you can't native build it, then it's, you're opening yourself up to possible bugs and things that you're not aware of. So unless it's something... The only time that cross-compiling is actually not supported but done is if a developer is bringing up a new platform. Other than that, everything is native built. Packages are native built. Like I said, it takes a long time for some of these.
How is the cross-compilation support?
For us?
For what you're working with, yeah.
Well, I don't actually use the cross-compiler because I'm not porting a new platform, but I can tell you that if you were to go into the source tree, you would find a makefile.cross right on the root of the source directory. But unless somebody's actually working on bringing up a port, it goes untouched. So there can be a long gaps where nobody even bothers to look at it. And there's no guarantee that it will work. So, and if you try to use it and you're not a developer, no one's really going to take you seriously. So that's something else to keep in mind too. And then of course the biggest problem with ports, and this is just about ports in general, is how do we get upstream to care about MIPS? Which is a smaller subset of a larger problem. How do we get upstream to care about OpenBSD, or any BSD for that matter? So, talking upstream is huge. And if I was doing a talk just on ports, I would hammer this a little bit more, but just to hit a few key points. If you make a port, you talk to upstream. With a few exceptions, if upstream does not explicitly mention OpenBSD or whatever BSD that you ported it to, on their website, it's a bug, period. And you should treat it as one. Because it's a feedback loop. You know, why do the same few other operating systems always get the users? It's because every single piece of software you want to use advertises on their site is supported on this platform. So if you get OpenBSD or FreeBSD or Net up all over the place, that will help with the feedback loop. Most options I've dealt with are very happy to add OpenBSD to their supported platforms list. I've had offers from just a nice thank you to people inviting me to be in upstream, so it varies. I've only ever had one project that flat out ignored me. Not going to name names, Synergy. But they're the only ones who have ever just flat out ignored me. So this is just a quick little template that I tend to email upstream whenever I do port something. You know, just say hello, who you are, you know, I'm an OpenBSD dev. I found whatever it is, I ported it. If I have any patches, I send it to them. You know, and then you just tell them the architecture that it works on, that you know it works on. For me, I have AMD 64 machines, PowerPC machines, and MIPS machines. And if they work on all three, they're being told that.
But
yeah?
What if the software is not really great, it's just fine?
Well, we don't tell them that. When in doubt, why to upstream? And you can quote me on that.
You got exactly what I was asking.
And so once it actually does hit the port tree, again, send another email, link the CVS web link so they can actually see that it's there, and just tell them, consider putting it on the website. And I've actually had some pretty big wins doing that. Those of you people who are interested in music and do that kind of stuff, there's actually a very large project called MuseScore, which is a free software replacement for things like Finale and Sibelius to compose your own music. And for a long time, they only had links to Windows, Mac, and Linux. And I bothered them enough, and now they have FreeBSD and OpenBSD on the site. And by the way, if anybody does FreeBSD ports, they're looking for someone to step up and be a maintainer for FreeBSD. So talk to me because I have their ear. So the future of OpenBSD and MIPS. The future in the short term is going to be long-term 3 support. That's coming sooner rather than later. Neo, I think, already has a 3A machine. And to my knowledge, he's working on it. But he's working on a lot of things, so I can never be sure exactly what he's working on. Improved tool chain, like I said, 2.17 comes. We get GCC 4.6 at least, probably GCC 4.8. That opens up a ton of new ports for us. Of course, the general fixing bugs, the work that never ends, and supporting more devices. We'd love to support more. Unfortunately, we're a volunteer project. Like George said, we rely on ourselves to buy these things, people to donate these things, people to donate us money to get these things. So if you have devices that you want to see supported, let me know, let somebody know, so we can get it into the hands of people who can actually do this stuff. So what's holding us back? The big thing is AVR support. Now, so this is not such a big deal on the x86 world because people don't really deal in different AVRs. But in the MIPS world, there are three main AVRs that we deal with. O32, N32, and N64. Which doesn't really mean anything to people generally. But the way it breaks down is O32 is a 32-bit AVR, which we do not run at all. We use 64-bit. N64 is the true 64-bit AVI. That's what we run. All of our stuff is N64. Then there's N32, which is take all the improvements of N64 and readapt it to the 32-bit world. We don't support that either. To my knowledge, NetBSD only supports N32, but I could be wrong. They might have some N64 ports. I tried once running NetBSD on one of my Yeelongs, and that was N32 from what I remember. And the problem with that is lots of software that does actually support MIPS expects O32. The big example of this is in WebKit. Their just-in-time compiler for JavaScript has MIPS support, but only MIPS O32 support. So it doesn't help us at all, because they're not compatible. And of course, hardware. The more hardware we get, the more we can support. And then one last thing, Opteon. It's finally coming. Everybody in the FreeBSD world likes this stuff. It's the little edge router like routers that you guys see, the $100 Opteon routers. We finally have a bunch of ourselves, and it's coming. Actually, as of this morning, I was notified that the first snapshot, I don't know if it went on FTP, but I have it. So it's coming sooner rather than later. So we're targeting the Portwell CAM 0100, which is about a $350 specialty network appliance, and then the Edge Router Lite. Like I said, it's still in early development. We really only started doing this up again about 2 months ago, I will say, maybe late January, so maybe not even 2 months. It starts in 2010 with an IIJ SDK, so we're not using the SDK that FreeBSD is using, which comes direct from Cavium. We're using a separate one developed by Internet Initiative Japan. We're using some of their own boards, and they donated to us in 2010. Then the port kind of fell dormant because the boxes that it did support are not cheap boxes. They're at least $350 if you can find them. Then the Edge Router Lite shows up in January for $100, and that jumpstarts our current efforts. So what currently works on Opteon is enough to boot CAM 0100. You have CF card support, so you have a hard drive. You have Ethernet support, you have basic chip support, you have RAM support, as long as you have 256 megabytes or less, because that's all it currently recognizes. What doesn't work yet, notably, is USB, which is a problem for the Edge Router Lite, because that's where its hard drive is stored. It's just a little USB key that's shoved in. So once we get that working, then we can start to see the Edge Router Lite really be used on OpenBSD. Again, if you want to help, always donate hardware. There's more hardware out there that's Octeon-based that we'd love to support. We just don't have our hands on them. So if you want to help out, definitely find us people who are willing to donate us Octeon hardware, and we would be happy to talk to them. Any questions, comments, flames, occasional encouragement, you can email me. Or, like I said, I'm on app.net. If you are, you can follow me. I'll even follow you back. So it's a win-win.
Question, why open BSD?